This afternoon, I'm talking with Mrs. K.T. Thompson, the widow
In the Alliance area for many, many years, and served both the black and white population in this community. I want to talk to her about his background and experience, how he came here, how he met her, and some of the experiences that she thinks are worth relating and should be recorded. Let's start first with his name. I found it K-E-T-O-U-S. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Now, how is that pronounced?
That is pronounced Kitoos.
Kitoos.
The accent on the...
On the E. Kitoos. And the T was, do you know, for...
Well, when...
Yes.
When he first arrived in this country and was at Florida A&M School, the other students couldn't get the pronunciation, and they it would be Kitoos and Kitoos and one of those things. So they said, "Oh, we can't try to go along with that. We'll just call you KT."
Oh, I
so
see.
So he didn't really have
a middle name.
Yeah,
but it was
middle name. So he just put the T in there.
I see. Well, that's why I couldn't find a name for that then.
That's right.
Right. Now, he grew up, he was born, he grew up in South Africa. Do you know what part of South Africa?
Yeah, South Africa, in Kimberley, up in the Diamond Region.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And do you know what, from what group of people, was there a particular tribe, was a particular group of people that he came from, do you know?
Oh, well, now...
Yeah, that doesn't make any difference, just if you think. Well, if you can, let's come back to it again, and you can mention what that is. What prompted him to come to America?
Well, from early childhood, he wanted to become a doctor. And a doctor in his country, of course, as you know, Mr. Osborne, it costs money to study medicine in South Africa. And but he was inspired by the pomp and all that was given to a doctor. They wore high silk hats and cutaway coats, I understand, and drove these very spirited horses and all. And that just was this inspiration. And just from then on, he just never gave up his hope.
Mm-hmm. And he decided it was a better opportunity if he came to...
Well, of course, naturally, his people were poor.
Mm-hmm.
And there were, I think, about a family of about four or five children.
Mm-hmm.
And so he saved money, and some way or other, shiny shoes, whatever he could do, and got enough money together to come by steerage, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And he had been brought up in the AME church, and at one time he had mentioned this. It seemed as though that his father was sort of I guess it's known as a lay minister.
Yes, a lay minister.
Mm-hmm. And so the bishop always stayed at his home. So each time that he came there, well, he would say, "Well, I want to go to America. I want to study medicine," and one of those things. And he said to him, "Well, now, my boy, if you ever make it," he said, "you will have a place to stay. I will see to that." So, that was the arrangement,
mm-hmm.
that he was to stay. They corresponded back and forth too. And when he was ready, then he said that he was to stay with this bishop's mother and sister, whom he was looking out for.
I see.
And believe it or not, when Dr. Thompson arrived in this country and of course, he was almost sent back, too. That's another interesting part of it, which upset him no end. The bishop was tied up some way or other, and the letters are crossed or something, but he could not He was not in New York receiving at Ellis Island. So they had said to him that now, if someone is not here by tomorrow, or just in a very short, a few days, mm-hmm. we'll say, that we're going to return you.
Oh, yeah.
You cannot enter without having a sponsor.
Mm-hmm. And so luck was with him and
so
the sponsor.
Luck was with him. Yes. Well, it so happened that the word got to the bishop in time that contacted a member of the church there and asked her to rush right over to the island and receive him in his name.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those things. But going back to the maintenance of the mother and sister of the bishop and Dr. Thompson, the bishop was giving, of course, today, we couldn't think about it, $5 a week.
$5 a week.
$5 a week for three persons.
My goodness.
So, and then another thing too that comes with that is what little money that Dr. had when he was getting himself bundled together to get out and leave for Florida. They thought going there that he would become acclimated more readily,
yes.
coming from a hot country climate and all. So, but he said that he just cried the bitterest tears when they took his gold money and gave him this paper.
Uh-huh.
He that knew that. Should I have come? People are here, these few bills.
Yes, he knew that was real security for him.
Yes, wait, you see.
That's right. So he landed in New York City and then left soon for Florida.
As soon as this person received him, yes.
Mm-hmm. Right. And then when he was in Florida, he went to what school?
Well, he first went, of course, he was just 12.
Yes.
He went to Florida A&M. It's known now as Florida A&M College, but of course they had, I suppose, different grades mm-hmm. and all.
Yes.
Probably that started 6th, 7th, 8th. I don't know what.
They had what they call a preparatory school.
Preparatory
school.
Right. And he stayed there and was there for several years because I think he got his... he was the first and only student that graduated when they set up their, he got, I think, would be his BA from there. He just mm-hmm. stayed on because
I
he
see.
Was the only
yes.
job he had. And he earned his way, his board and keep by having a little garden, it was an agricultural school,
sure.
as you know, and so then he would have a horse or a little cart or something, and then when these vegetables were ready, he would peddle them through into town.
Mm-hmm.
He would go into, now see, that would be in Tallahassee.
Tallahassee, right. Mm-hmm.
So when he stayed there, he said almost until I put him out. We mm-hmm. said, they said, well, there's nothing more that you can do here now. So then, of course, he was ready to try to raise tuition and all and get into pre-med and all. So, of course, he ran on the road and... and that would be in the summertime when school's out of session. It just comes back, you know, in
yes.
lines. Of course, he took his medical degree at McHenry. And this quite at that time, there was quite a bond between the chaps who were here from South Africa. I remember him telling about he had this one person whom he didn't know in South Africa until he got to this country, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And Nigel was rather slow, very deliberate in everything, and sort of reticent about making approaches.
Yes.
So Dr. Barga, his friend, who and classmate, who was just the opposite, he said that, well, I just, he says, you can't find a job at all. He says, okay, take my job. He said, well, what are you going to do? And he said, well, I'll find one. And so he gave him his job, which was in a, well, it was, I think it was called a boarding house. It was a family who would board in room folks that went down from the north just for the winter.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. A nice batch of people mm-hmm. and all. And maybe I'm a little ahead, of course, so he's in school and knew and was studying and all. But he had his duties were to, as I understand, they cooked with wood. They put wood sure. and stuff. So one of the duties was to have enough wood in for the cook to have fire to cook by, and there was certain other things that he had. But he said that the lady that ran this boarding house was very, very kind to him. She always insisted that the cook see that she didn't give him more to do than it would take him to get in time to get to school.
Mm-hmm.
And they paid and packed him a lunch. And there was a streetcar that ran from where he lived to the
medical school.
Medical school. Mm-hmm. And so they paid him $1.50 a week wages. And instead of doing that, he got up earlier so he could get his chores done and then have time to walk to school and save that dollar and a half as wages.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a cot. His room was a cot in the basement and where he slept. Something, a box or something to study on. And the husband of this, and I think...
No, this is fine. This is fine, Mrs. Thompson.
The husband of the lady that was running the boarding house had lost his sight. So everything that doctor could find to read him, of course he read to him other things, of course,
yes.
but anything to do with the eyes, he was interested in having him read that to him. And so he became very, very close and dear to those people.
Yes.
And he always spoke very, very, very kindly of them. It stood out to him because he could see he wasn't quite used to it yet, but he had heard the things that, or probably the feeling that was sent out of the difference of color.
Yes.
And race and all. But he said never did this.
That never entered in there.
That never did. Because these people, I think probably they're just, maybe they had children or something, or didn't, and doesn't matter. But their heart just went out that he was struggling so hard to attain an education,
yes.
meet a goal. And probably, as you know and I know, that when we look around Alliance or any other place, and that see the opportunity that is offered, and not one particular race, but many boys and girls do not take the opportunity. And as my husband used to say, because I cannot, and he would even talk to youngsters who would come in the office, say, oh, I'm going to quit school as soon as I can, come of age,
yes.
so that they could quit school. And he'd say, I cannot understand. He said, don't you know that an education is the most important thing? Oh, well, I can get a job here or there and the other thing, but it isn't required. So I'm just going to quit. Or as soon as they could get their parents
to sign. Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Get their parents' consent.
Yes.
So that always impressed me very much.
Yes.
That he did.
He valued that very much.
He valued it, and really, and I really do believe that some ways along the line that he was an inspiration to some of the boys and girls that had thought that, because I know at one time we had there was a person that we were needing some help, and so the father brought the daughter up, and he said, well, she's, well, I think it was 16 was the age that you could put.
Yes, that's it.
At that time. And he said, and I hear that you need some help. And that would be back in the home, because I, of course, was working every day. And there had to be somebody to look after the house to an extent. And he said, well, are you going to work? Or do you want to quit school? And she said, yes. And he turned to the father and he says, and would you permit her to quit school? And he said, yes. He says, I'm saying how many children and this, that, and what it took to live and trying to buy a home and one of those things. He said, well, he said, that isn't her problem. He said that you're responsible for her and try to give her an education. And he said, no, he said, I don't think I could choose her.
Mm-hmm.
And so he said, the father said, well, if you don't, he said, somebody else will.
Mm-hmm.
So my husband said, so you're just really that determined that this girl is going to get a domestic job. And he said, yes, he said, somebody else will hire. He said, well, all right, he says, I'll hire her if she will, and I think that she could work and go to school so many hours, I believe, in the morning.
In the mornings, yes.
In the mornings, that's how it was. He says, I'll hire her that way. And did you know that he kept after that girl? She would come and do what she could do in the afternoon. Maybe she'd work a little later. Anyways, it's enough hours to do what was necessary to keep a path through that.
Yes.
And that girl really turned out and finished, went back to school and finished. And I don't know where she is now, but the last I heard from her, she was an RN.
Well, isn't that fine? Yeah. A little insistence and determination.
But when he saw that the father was just so determined that she was going to get a job and quickly. So he says, all right, he says, if she'll do that, he says, then I will pay her, pay you, that you will be satisfied.
So, well, that's very fine. Well, he had this struggle, as he had in Florida, to get through Meharry. And when he finished there, then he was ready to start practice. Where was the first place he started?
Alliance.
In Alliance. What brought him here?
Well, he had these classmates, and one of them was this Dr. Bargai, South African, whom I had mentioned before.
Now let me have the spelling on that name, so we're sure.
Well,
you know?
I almost forgot. This is Bargy, and I just don't know. I don't know. I used to go as Bond with his wife.
Mm-hmm.
But I just
Well, that'll be close enough.
Yes.
Well, he decided on a lot.
That is the pronunciation,
yes.
Dr. Bargai. And of course, they took the state board, they do when they come out of medical school, most every place,
yes.
They take that state board, which is like falling off a log.
Yes.
They take care, each state takes take care of their own. So, but doctor's ambition was to take Ohio board. It was said at that time that it was the hardest medical board to pass.
Oh.
And he was just that sort of wanted.
That was a challenge for him.
He loved challenges.
Yes.
So this Dr. Bargai and Dr. I'm thinking of the three of them went to Michigan board because these other two doctors wanted to settle in Detroit. So they took the Michigan board and passed, and the one became a surgeon, and he stayed in surgery for quite a while. But Dr. Bargai started in as a GP, general practitioner. So Dr. Thompson said, "No," he says, "I'm going to Ohio and take the board." And but he didn't come right here. He went to Pittsburgh and was serving as a busboy in sort of a restaurant that served exclusively to lunches for men, businessmen.
Mm-hmm.
And but all the time he was ready to getting ready for State Board of Ohio. So when the time was ready and all, then he went and took his board, and that was, by the way, then quite frustrating waiting to know.
Yes, it would be.
And also he was still at this place, this restaurant. And when the word came that he had passed the state board here, and so then he started flipping the field over, quit his job then, and came. And as I recall it, he went to Youngstown, and to look that field over. Well, he called on the college physicians that were listed, and they didn't think that they needed any more, that it was quite enough. And so the college physicians there at that time, and there was some other place, but I remember him telling that while he was in Youngstown, Dr. Red said to him, "There's place not far from here," he said, "maybe 30 miles," he said, "called Alliance." He said, "Did you ever hear of it?" And the doctor says, "Yes." He says, "You used to go through there." Yeah, I think he was on the Red Air or something. I think that he wasn't even stopping. He said, "I've heard the name." And he said, "Well, they have never had a college physician there." I said, "Why do you not go over there and look at that field?" It was so telling.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And so, he says, "Well, I will do that." So he came over, and he wasn't too impressed with what he saw of Alliance when he arrived, but he did call on several of the men, Dr. Perry King, and different other men.
Yes.
I think Dr. Perry King was the chief of staff at that time.
They probably would be.
And different ones, it just seemed as though that no one had ever thought about there being, in this part of the country, when we better say,
yes,
of there being a college physician. It just seemed an impossibility.
Mm-hmm.
They started, and even though Dr. had his credentials and all, but they just couldn't understand. And so, anyways, he went someplace else after he didn't seem to get too much encouragement in the line. So, in the meantime, some person whom he had met here and just going about town got in touch with him, and he said, "Well, I have a place that'll be suitable for an office if you're coming back here." So my husband thought to his, he was getting very anxious to get practicing, and so he said, "Well, I might as well go on back to Alliance," he says, and just see what happens. And in the meantime, these men had these friends in Detroit and said, "Don't come now, times are too bad." He said, "Wait, if you stay there in Alliance, because this town is overcrowded with doctors, and it's not easy making it, especially just hanging out your shingle.
Yes.
So I just started, and incidentally, this place that this person had gotten for him to have an office was had been the wash house of the building, which was the Methodist. House was the
parsonage
of the AME church.
Yeah.
So they would rent him that, and so he had his office and his living quarters, and
in that one.
My
goodness.
I don't recall. There must have been some space to have privacy between patients. But however, it was all in his. Everything was right there, and even the examining table was the where he slept.
My goodness.
So he just went on from there, and that, as he called it, always referred to it as his starvation period.
I can imagine that.
In his case, it was that you had a son, there would be somebody to sort of hold you up,
yes,
and sustain you till you got on your feet. But with having no people here in this country, and of course his folks weren't too, they thought that he would become discouraged and get back home because they really didn't want him that far away from him. And he, incidentally, he never got back home.
He
never saw his people again.
Oh, yes.
Never again after that. And so he in this wash house, which had been wash house, he always says, my first house, office was a wash house. And they used to have those, as you do.
That's right. Oh, yes.
Outside the building.
Yes.
So then after a time, we walked. At that time, he said that there was a trolley that ran through town. And he would, if it was not in walking distance, when he got a call, and it was usually when the folk could not reach their own position, or it would be in the middle of the night, and they would say, "Oh, well, wait till I'll be there in the morning," and like that. So, of course, everything seems worse at night, so they would call doctor. We'll call the new doctor. Okay. Well, he would go. And so if he could walk, he'd walk. And it's not like then he'd take the trolley. Well, because he was a new doctor, "Well, doctor, I'll pay you when I get the money." So there was even out the trolley fare sometimes.
So it would be quite a struggle. Then he moved from there to an office on, was it East Patterson?
Well, he never was off of Patterson.
I see. He was right on there.
He moved then later on up into a building there, right at that, which it's gone now, of course, with this urban renewal, but it was right at the very foot of the divide. Like, if you didn't have good pressure from
right into it, I see.
So, he stayed there for several years. In fact, when we got married, that's where he was. He had three rooms that he used for offices. And had a bedroom and an empty room upstairs. And of course, he didn't use and a bath. It was not a very nice. It was a tangy building, I believe. That's what it was known as.
Yes.
And it's sort of a long building, and he was on one end, and then there was a living of an apartment like for somebody else, and then there was a watchmaker on the other end. I know there were three renters in that
building.
So when I came here, he was still there, and he had said to me before, after we had become engaged, he said, "Well, I think instead of trying to get me to select the home, wait till you come, and then you pick out find what you want." So we lived there then, it was about 10 or 11 months, and that was an ordeal to find a home with a nice address,
yes.
you might say, because the Alliance just wasn't ready for.
That's right. That's right. At that
for
time.
For our people doing yeah. at that time.
Well, now let's back up a little bit. You're getting a home here, but I want to know where your home was and how you.
My home.
Yeah.
Well, my home. I was born over the hill. I'm a river rat.
Oh, whereabouts is it?
Wellsville.
Oh, Wellsville.
Yes.
Sure.
Wellsville, and then you know it's about 3 or 4 miles.
Yes.
From East Liverpool.
I know.
And one of those points where you can stand with one foot in one bait and one in the other and look across
right.
the other,
yes.
Pennsylvania, Ohio,
mm-hmm.
and West Virginia. And, of course, a doctor had been here practicing for some time, and then they had gotten quite a number of people that used to come up from Wellsville to him, and he'd gotten so many, one of his patients down there said to him at one time, well, if you will give Alliance a day, why, we will, you may have a room in my house to see your patients.
You mean Wellsville?
In Wellsville.
Yes, right.
So he thought about it, and he thought, well, I might as well do it, then I'll just take a day off and out and go down there, and that would save the patients.
Yes.
And there was a train, believe it or not, running at that time.
Oh, yes, that's when there were lots of trains at this station down
yes.
here. Yes.
So they could do it that way. So then he went down there. But I didn't see him. I didn't see him. I think he had been coming down there for maybe 4 or 5 years before I, and I never seen him. But it just so happened that one time, you asked me how I met him.
Yes.
So one day I had seemingly this terrible sore throat, and it would happen on the day that our doctor was out of town. So my mother says, well, I don't know what to do. She said that it's not getting any better with their little home remedies and all. So she said, I said, believe I'll call Mrs. Reday. She says, I'll call that killing doctor and see if he can do anything for you. So he finally got there, so back forever and ever. So that was that. I remember he gave me something, and I said, I'd be all right to go to work in the morning. And he said, oh no, this was on a Thursday, I recall. And he said, oh no, he said, don't do that. He said, I'll have to see you again.
Mm-hmm.
I said, you're asking for a sore throat. And he said, yes. And I said, well, when? I said, oh, do you stay overnight? And he says, no. He says, I'll be back Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the beginning.
I see.
So my mother made a mistake of asking him to stay for dinner on the Sunday, and that's
the way. Well, I think you ought to be a good Presbyterian after that. You know, you're leaving predestination now. Your doctor's out of town, and your mother helps it along.
And believe me or not, sister, yes, I used to kid him, and I'd say, really, I said that you really were paying more attention to my mother. Oh, you never saw such fruit, at least started sending her and candy and stuff. Not flowers to me at all, but it was my mother.
Now, you were working in Wellsville at that time?
No, I was in East Liverpool at the time. It was and this so happened to be in the summertime, and I was home from school. And I was keeping books in a transfer company there known as Mills Transfer. And that was the reason I didn't want to miss any time.
Yes.
And
then after he treated the patient and she recovered, how long did it take you to become a receptionist and come to Alliance then?
Well, the first Sunday, as I say, he came to say that I could go back to work the next day. Why, Mother, of course, asked him then for dinner, and he said, I don't have much to do. He says, how about me coming to see you next Sunday? Well, I guess I found myself saying it. I wasn't really, really, I wasn't thinking about anything like that. But however, he got to talking right away with my mother, and they had this very, very interesting conversation about Africa. She was interested. Well, I had come. I went to it's known as Central State now.
Wilberforce, yes.
And I had come in contact with a lot of Africans. Well, I couldn't care less, it seemed. So I thought to myself, he had come so early, so I thought to myself, I think I was going out that evening someday. So I went out and proceeded to get the dinner. So I was gone all the time. So he knew that I had gotten the dinner. So when I walked into the bedroom room, I said, well, dinner is served. I said, will you come to the dining room? So, of course, they came out. Well, I guess he was just a little amazed that I even knew
how to cook.
So it went on from that. So about that, I guess we went together in about 2 years. And mm-hmm. Because one thing, see, after having gotten his third paper as a citizen, and so after we had became engaged around Christmas time, and he said, well, now we cannot set a date, he says, because until I will have received my citizenship, because of course naturally I would take on his citizenship.
Right, yes.
So he said, you don't want to lose that as hard as I'm trying to become a citizen. So then it was 2 years, I should say, all together. Mm-hmm. We knew each other, and then I came here and started into my monkey wrenching business, as I said. Wherever I was needed, I was willing to go ahead and do. I just sort of oversaw things and went for help where I could.
But you really were in the office now, weren't you?
Oh,
all the time,
time.
Yes.
I lived, as I said, over the office in these two rooms for 10 months, while we were hunting a house. Mm-hmm. Well, just at the time that we found a home was a time that he had said to me, well, can you help straighten out these books? He was trying to do it himself. And he'd mark it carelessly, you know, mark it down. He had made a call so-and-so. Well, it was a chore for me.
Mm-hmm.
So finally we got onto a system. Well, then just at the time that then I started helping in the office. He didn't have any regular, just somebody to come in and clean up the place and stay and answer the take phone calls while he was out on house call.
Mm-hmm.
So then I started to just sort of work myself gradually, and sometimes, I don't know, it was an experience,
mm-hmm.
so that I don't regret. But then we got things straightened out, and then I said, well, to him one day, if I'm going to help here in this office, that then it meant traveling back and forth for
mm-hmm.
food and sleeping whatever. So, but I said, I cannot stand it. I said, it's too crowded here. We've got to get a better, bigger place than this. So then there was the last place that he was in. He had three offices. And the one that I had chosen was right across the street next to which was known then as the Kessler Bakery.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
And there was 8 rooms in that house, and that was a lot different than having 3 rooms where I went to for offices.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. So I was telling someone about this just the other night that I had mentioned to him several times. I said, why don't you go into large quarters? Why not let's go uptown and get into one of the office buildings? And no, so I came to Alliance to be the colored doctor, and he says, and I want to stay in this neighborhood. And I mentioned to him, I said, well, probably I shouldn't go into that, but I said, well, is it worth it? That's
mm-hmm.
Well, when I saw that he was very interested in his work and very sad, happy with where he was. So I went and saw this place across the street and talked to Mr. Kessler about it and made arrangements and had the decorating done in between my work and everything, got things laid out. And he says, I see they're doing something over to me. He threw it to me one day. A passing there, Kessler must be, has rented that place again, and somebody looks like they're doing it over. And I said, yes, it looks like that is going on.
It's the voice of innocence.
I said, it seems to be going pretty rapidly, too. And so, however, he didn't, I guess, didn't think any more about it. And I was so happy that when the Kesslers were patients that they didn't mention when they came in. Mm-hmm. So he finished, he had night hours, and that was the time when doctors were having morning and afternoon and night hours, plus making house calls. So this was the vibe arranged with the men. We had gotten everything out that I knew that he wasn't going to be needing before we moved. While he would be out making calls, those things would go over. And so I arranged for the men to come, the things that had to go at the last minute. Had them there waiting, and it was about 11 o'clock when he thought he was through. And he came, called me to the side. He said, it's 11 o'clock. Do you mean to tell me that you have still people waiting on me? He said, Do I have to see him? He said, I'm dead tired. I said, no. I said, you really don't have to see him. I said, then you can just sit down and take a nice rest here. I said, these men came to move you. He said, move me? From what? What do you mean? So then I explained. I said, we're moving across the street tonight. And he was just flabbergasted. So anyway, the men got there. The things were taken out. I got up early the next morning and got down there and worked with these men and got everything. And Dr. Thompson never lost a minute in his office. Monday morning, he said.
Right in. That's remarkable to do that.
So it was a joy. It was a joy because he lived. I used to kid him sometimes. I said, you, I really believe you'll think more of the patient than you think of me. He said, well, you know better.
So, no, I'm sure that each had his place, but he was a man of great dedication.
But it was really a joy to help him as I could.
Now, you spoke earlier of a general practitioner. Is this how you would characterize the doctor,
yes,
as a general practitioner?
Yes, general practitioner.
What do you think was his, spatially, if he had one?
And looking and breaking up his library and all after he went on, I never realized how many books the doctor had on surgery. So, and even to this day, some of them I had given them to the library at the hospital. They came one time and probably got, of course, the books were marked and all, but they came and got a lot. But even today, there are books on the third floor on surgery. So I really think that was his ultimate goal.
Yes.
But he just got to the place that he wanted to help everybody in the way that he could, and even he seemed like that he even hated to do that. He was delivering in the homes long after other doctors wouldn't even do that. See, so it was one of just helping people.
Yes.
And then of course the change came after we got the new hospital, after, you know, we went off College Street and all, and then the doctor soon had to, they weren't, but I won't say, use the word for a minute, but they did all of their deliveries
in the hospital. Yes, that's right. Well, now, after you got him set up in the new office and you were looking for a home, your move was from there to
melt in that. Yes, on the wheel every
time. And that was what, about 28 or 29?
That was 29.
Yes.
Yes, because by the time we got in.
When I came to college here in the 30s, this was considered somewhat outstanding, number one, to have a color doctor in the community, and then to have them live in what was considered the fashionable street in Alliance at that time. Mm-hmm. Now, did you incur any sort of what we'd call discrimination, or is that putting it mildly?
Oh, that's very mild. Very mild. That was the ordeal that I wasn't used to, because our little community at Wellsville, I never went to school with another college student, I mean in the same grade the whole way through. And you lived where you...
Or you wanted to.
Or you could.
Yes.
Let's put it that way. And so I just couldn't. That was the hardest thing for me to face. I said, well, what is the difference? I just didn't know.
Yes.
I just didn't know. Of course, I was born and brought up in an AME church. We had our own church and like that. But I couldn't. And then when I came here and to try to find a home, and in the places that my husband would contact these realtors, and someone would come here, you know, that he would, from word to mouth, you know, that he was looking for a home. But you cannot, my dear sir, understand. I couldn't explain the places that they would take you. Now, I nothing down, we won't say, on Patterson Street, that the some of the nicer homes, but they, of course, were owned.
Yes,
and all,
they're not available.
Were not available. So, but it would be way out. Oh, boy. Mm-hmm. When I say way out, at that time, there was, what was it known as, garbage, Whitebush, didn't they?
Oh, yes.
Just bowls of
yes, water. They had a...
I know one way they took us to see a big old barney out, and right near there, and I thought, well, however could you stand it when they were disposing of that stuff? So I've made many a trip, and I had just said to my husband, I said, now the next person that contact you. See, I'm living still upstairs, not helping, not doing anything, but just living up there, looking up that terrible viaduct, which was closed, and I couldn't see too far. And so I said, I'm not going anymore. I said, if you want to go and find a place that you think you know what I have in mind, and now if you want to go and say it, okay, but I'm not going. So, it so turned out that a woman called me and she said to me, a patient this was, she said, have you both found a home yet? I said, oh heavens no. I said, I'm just about ready to go back to home to Wellsville. And then she went on telling me, she said, well, I know a house that these people, this person that helps owns it. It has to be sold. She has to sell it. And I said to her, well, where is it? Well, I didn't even know the name of the street that well yet.
Mm-hmm.
And she told me, and still, that she had heard this from her next door neighbor. This was a Mrs. Moore that used to live on Oxford. I didn't really know her or not.
No.
Yeah, well, however. Let me go back. When my husband was showing me the town after we had come back from our honeymoon, and he had took time to show me a line. So when he took me out and brought me out here in the south end of town, And he turned off at Union Avenue on the Mountain Street. I said, this is a pretty street. I would like to live on there. I said, is this a boulevard? And he said, no, it's not a boulevard. He said, the boulevard is that back farther. Said, oh, I said, I'd love to live there. And Dr. just laughed. He said, you must be kidding or something like that. Well, but however, when this is Roy, it's only Milton Street still, and it still didn't ring a bell. So she told me that if she would pick me up, she'd make an appointment with this lady for me to come to see the house. And so she guided me how to get there and all. So as soon as I turned off of Union Avenue, I thought to myself, goodness, now I wasted a lot of time. I said that to myself, this is the street that I don't have to see Dr. to live on. So however, we went in and talked to this lady that seemed to be there for the boys or something, and she was there with three children.
Oh.
That was the reason she wanted to sell. And of course, I was impressed by the street, and the house was a palace to everything that I had seen in the Malayan. So I went home that evening at dinner table. I said to my husband, guess what I did this afternoon? And he said, I had a police right there. And I said, I went and found a house. I said, and I think she would like it. He said, where is it? He said, he brightened up very brilliantly. And he says, where is it? I said, do you remember when you were showing the alliance? I said, you remember that street that you told me that it was out of the question? And he said, and went right on in, he says, oh. And he said, well, how did you ever get out there? And so I told him the story. And I said, but I can't do anything about it. And I said, until you see it and see if I didn't ask the price or anything. I said, I'll just bring my husband. So I said, will you go this evening? He says, heavens no. Anyways, it really, this then, it took me 2 weeks.
Is that right?
To get him out there. And this was it's so one night he said to me, he said, listen, we got through rather early in the second night, and I said, well, I believe I'll go if you want to go and see this house. But he was making sure that nobody was going to know about it.
Yes.
So I called the lady and told her, I said, would it be all right to come to that town? And she said, oh, yes. And then so we went. And he looked at it and talked to her and all. And it came out that, of course, they had to find the husband, and the house was still in between them.
Oh, yes.
So that took a little time. And then, of course, the other trouble started. Well, I had said to my husband, after when we really signed the papers and passed the check and everything, after when the husband had gotten here, the ex-husband had gotten here. And so I said, she had to. The lady had said to me, this was in May, and she said that very early in May, or maybe April, I don't know, but that, no, it was May, that's right, because she was from school then. She said, do you want possession? I said, I'm no hurry. I said, I'm used to living where I am now, and I said, there's plenty of things that I want, some changes that I want to do. And she said, well, I would appreciate it if I might stay here and not have to change
during the school.
So that's really good. And then after that, I said, well, any time after school, that'll be all right with me. So.
Well, now did the doctor like the house as much as you did?
Well, the thing, I'll have to go back here again. When we came down from signing the papers and everything, and everything was in our name, after what I had sort of felt, the way that we had been treated by these homes that had been shown us and everything. We didn't know that there had, neither of us knew that there had been a feud between the people next door and the people whom we had bought. So I said, Dr. Johnson, I said, I think it's the best thing for us to go right now. I said, because now we won't have this at the session until after school's out and get some insurance. So it was Ian
and Guthrie.
So they come in right out that very day. So the people next door wanted to know, but he was looking around naturally and looking at the roofs and different things. Guthrie. So anyways, he asked him what, and he said, oh, this house has been sold. And they said, they wanted to buy it. And of course, that was the funniest thing. Until the house question came up, a lot of people didn't know that there was even a college position in town.
I suppose that's
and
so.
And so he heard of that, she said. You think you're going to move over there? Well, I don't know whether he moved it, but he's going to move it here or not, but he had
the house.
So from then on, we had some things to meet. It didn't please the people. It didn't, the people, as I say, there was this little feud between, you know, some neighbors.
Yes.
Living in, you can live in and out of your neighbor's house too much. And I think that would happen. So I think they thought that this was a worth a fight. But it wasn't.
Yeah.
It was necessity with the person she had.
Had to.
So the people next door then, that's when the petition started.
Well, that would be an experience to go through.
To me, it was.
Yes.
To me, because as I say, if I didn't tell everybody,
yes.
Just, well, the man was a far that.
That's right. Yes. So, well, now, did the doctor with his practice, did he have time to really enjoy the home? Did he?
Well, yes, he did. He left his yard. The lawn was his pet, and. And he enjoyed it. Of course, he had some pretty long hours, as I say, still doing house calls and OB in the home even then and all. But he enjoyed it. I'd like to bring this up too.
All right.
Doctor, what you? When you go to a movie and see pictures, or even in our geographies at the time, it showed the African with the bones in their nose,
yes.
Or whatever, not the bones, well, something you know. And all.
Yes.
And Dr. Johnson said he always lived in a house. He never lived in a grass hut and like that. He said he was poor. He said he remembers it. When he got a new pair of shoes, he wouldn't wear them home. He was going to save them. He had walked barefoot in
yes.
one of those things. So, but I think that he was pleased with what we were able to get in Alliance and all. And the time that he was free, he got his greatest joy, particularly in the summertime, taking care of his lawn and. And that's one of the mistakes I think I made, that I'd stay there so long trying to and try to keep the lawn up. I'm finding out now that I can't do that.
Yes.
Because you can't get the help and
that's
all.
Right.
And the heat, nobody could cut the lawn.
Just,
yes.
Yes,
it had to
right.
be cut this way, this week, and the other way.
Wait, that's right, yes.
So one of those things. And there was no such thing as not catching the grass. No, so... He trained several youngsters, but I felt sorry for them. So he was just people. He might as well have
done it anyway. Yes.
With them, so.
Yeah.
So,
But that'd be a good relaxation.
But it was when he tried golf for a while, we had thought we would get in, but we took some golf lessons on our day off up in Cleveland. There was a colored pro up there that he knew pretty well, and we used to go out to Highland, but then it got, he just got more
involved,
yes, and he didn't, so we gave it up, so it didn't, just settled for his gardening, his flowers. We never had vegetables or anything, but
and I like to grow them. I grow flowers, and I let my wife cut the grass. We have a riding mower.
Yes.
We have a big place.
Yes.
And a lot of trees. And this year, we raked. Oh, we have a mound as big as this room here. And she said, I think at our age next year, we'll get one of these attachments that you can,
yes.
You don't have to work quite so hard.
Yes, that would be a good idea.
Yeah.
And, of course, then if you have the ground, wouldn't that for compost?
That's what I use it for.
Yes.
Yeah, I compost it. Mm-hmm. Yes, that's very good. Mm-hmm. Right. Well, now, can you corrected me when I started, and I made, a wrong assumption. This was about the doctor's practice in Alliance here. And I want to go back. When I came to school, I remember this was pointed out, that there was a couple living on Milton. This was a colored physician, but always the very finest words spoken of the couple and of the man as a physician. And it was not, in my experience, this was not deprecating. It was not, it was accepted, but it was an exception.
Yes.
But it was accepted.
Yes.
And I think you mentioned something earlier about looking out and seeing a viaduct, and I think maybe that your husband, as a doctor, was a viaduct or a bridge. I think he served in this sense. Don't you feel that in the community?
Yes, I do. I certainly do. At the time of Dr.'s demise, which, as you might recall, was quite sudden.
Yes.
And so afterwards, since I had had all those years of experience working right with him and knew just the setup, his setup, of course, it could have been changed. But the thought came to me, well, now here is a nucleus for a man just coming out of school. To build up a practice is not easy.
That's right.
Because you've got to gain confidence.
Right.
And as I say, the time the doctor, when he first came here, he would get called only when
necessity.
Yes.
Right.
Or until they could get in touch with their tomorrow.
Yes.
And he never thought when he got that kind of call about going back tomorrow, because he knew that he wasn't needed. But my thought was, well, here, if I can make contact with a chap that has just finished his paper, just ready to looking for a field, that if, and I advertised in, we have the college organization has what is known as the national journal, not the AAMA, and then there is the national, the national, of course, is all colored. So I would go through that and see and look at the graduating classes and all. I contacted his school, Meharry, and to know where, if they had a lead, and told them what I had to offer. I always spelled it out this way, that the outline of the place. So it was an 8-room house, and five of them was used strictly for offices, and everything was there, and everything there was the records, the charts, and everything I knew, and promised and offered rather to stay on Braddon for as long as they felt that they needed me to get it. If they wanted to work it out differently than the doctor, all right. But to hear, say, Mrs. John Doe would come in. Well, I would simply go and know where to pull that chart, which, of course, anybody else could learn. But I could privately say to the doctor, well, there would be so much on there. Well, and doctor dispensed most of his own medicine.
Oh,
so he was a country doctor.
Sure.
And there was always sort of a bond between. Did you know Dr. I don't know if his name. It's right on the end of my tongue. He was city doctor for a while.
Was Dr. Unger?
Dr. Rowland.
Oh yes, Dr. Rowland. Oh yes, I knew
Dr.
him.
Rowland
yes.
Was kind, you know, he always gave his own medicine.
That's right.
Sometimes that an RX was necessary. I mean, in my experience down there, but I would say sometimes I could have said to that person, well, this the doctor had them on so and so, but it didn't, so they get along better with this or that. There's those little
the little things that makes a difference.
That makes a difference.
Yes.
Or this person cannot stand but so much.
Yes.
I mean, you have to sympathize. She comes in first for sympathy.
Yes.
That was her illness.
That's right.
And her thought,
yes.
You see. So instead of just going, putting them in a room, and oh, the doctor will be in the middle of the day, well, he would go in, well, how do you do, Mrs. So-and-so? How are you there? Isn't it beautiful? Just trying to get their mind off of what they thought was wrong.
Yes.
So I went through, I think I kept that place open for about 2 years and tried and thinking it was going, I went back to in my thought about how hard it was for Doug
to get established.
And to get somebody to reach out that helping hand.
Yeah.
So I thought even taking the they could have been there. I gave it to them there were one or two came to see me. I said, you can either buy an outbuilding and all as is, or you can rent, you can lease, whatever will help you. But I know that you're just getting on your feet. And do you know what? One man came who seemed to be very interested from the southern part of the state. And I think he wasn't very much impressed. But you know, his wife called me long distance. And she said to me, you know what her question was? Honestly, it's
no,
unbelievable. She said, well, my husband tells me about this place that you have there. I would like to know what the social life is in the one. And I said, well, my dear lady, I don't know. I haven't had time to sell it. But one of those
yes.
things where then so many of our friends out of town, you know, went on. Well, I knew just everything to do and what had to be done and like that because I had been there every day and took care of the business end of it. But there was a friend of mine, her husband went on here just about a year ago. And when that happened, she did not know one thing. She said, well, she had talked to me, called me long distance. She says, how did you manage? I said, well, I just went about the things. I said, I stayed here quite a while trying to give somebody a chance to take over. But I said, as far as the other part, I said, it was no trouble at all. I said, she says, well, I never went to my husband's office unless I went by to pick up a check.
Yeah, yes. Well, that makes a big difference.
Yeah.
Yes, it does. Now, I believe I noticed in the early years, and I don't know whether this was before your association, that there was a dentist here by the name of Dr. Childress, was it?
Dr. Childress was a classmate of my husband.
Well, I wondered if there was a connection.
And he came, he was practicing in that, you know, a lot of people don't like small towns.
Yes.
So he was practicing dentistry in Cleveland, and my husband went on his day off, went to Cleveland every Friday, and it was just a habit that he had to have a little time to himself.
Yes.
And he'd stop by and see different classmates, and he got well. He says, well, many times I'd go there and never see anyone, and patients, and they would sit and talk and talk. As long as that you could spare then to get back on the road home. So he had said to him one day, he said, well, how is business? And he said, well, keeping the soul and body together or something like that. And he said, well, why? And he was still in this first place with the upstairs. He said, so there's a vacant room. I have a bedroom and there's a bath there and a vacant room. He said, why don't you consider coming to Alliance? And he said, now there's an extension on the telephone. He said, nothing, it won't cost you a thing. So fix up that room, use my reception room downstairs for your patients, and we'll have some sort of a system or however to sort of let them know that you're ready or however.
Yeah.
Like that, he came for a while.
He didn't like that. No. Did he go back to Cleveland then?
He went on back to Cleveland. Mm-hmm. I think he was gone on now.
That's interesting.
And nothing. There was nothing. No sharing of utilities or anything. That was
a
way to help
us. You can't understand that. He had it made, and if he just had a little patience with that.
And half the time, I hate to say this, but almost directly across the street, it was on the corner of Webb and Patterson Street, there was a pool room. And someone would come in and ask for the dentist, or doctor sometimes would say, would you maybe like one to have your teeth checked? He can help you too. You
sure.
And the patient would come back and say, there's no one up there. And so he said, well, he must have stepped out or maybe went to lunch or something like that. So when he came back, he said, where have you been? He said, oh, this close to people.
Well, you don't build up a practice that way.
Well, you can't depend on a friend to do everything.
That's right.
I thought it'd be very generous.
Yeah. Were there any other colored physicians here that you know?
Yes. The doctor was the first.
He was the first.
Uh-huh.
And he was the only one then.
Well, then after I'd been here a long time, then this Dr. Mason.
Yes, I know. But I meant during the years that Thompson was
not
practicing.
And everything was opened up wide then. There
yes.
was no problem about getting a home. Where
yes, right.
And all.
Yes.
And,
but you went through the very trying period for that.
Really, really yes. Trying when you couldn't, they didn't even want paper. Oh, it was more than I want to even remember.
Yes, yes, I'm sure.
I always try to say people would do better if they knew better. So
yes.
Yeah, you have to.
Right.
You have to not tell those things again.
The doctor passed on in what?
In 63.
63.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, it was quite.
And so you have stayed on here, and you consider this home in a sense, do you?
Well, I don't have people. My people are all gone, and so I have just stayed on, and now I have a little more house and. Mm-hmm. The yard and all there, so but I still Alliance is home.
Sure.
So I will probably make some change, maybe to
a smaller
quarters.
But I can understand after all the work and struggle you've put in and your association
and
with the doctor. Why, sure, I can think.
And I have beautiful friends friendships that have come out of my association with the office. I just the other day I saw some person and I looked at them and I dropped my eyes. I thought well they don't know me, and she turned this lady turned around and she said that. And asked me if I were who I am.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, you remember me? And she said, why, yes, I remember you. She said, I can see you just as plain as the other day, see? So even people sometimes, too, that I've forgotten about, they'll walk up and ask me if they're mistaken or not. And I'd say, no. And I said, well, it really does my heart a lot of good.
That's right.
To know that
people still think about and remember you.
That's right.
That's right. Yes. It is. It's interesting. Yeah.
Can you, well, we've been talking a long time, and I must not impose on you too much, but this has been very interesting. I'm glad to have it down. Is there an experience that you think of that you would like to, we've been talking about a lot, but I thought there might be something different or unusual.
It doesn't come right at the moment, yes. Comes. Something that, of course, some of the things that seem better are too, but I don't think that it should be aired because the people that I say, had people known better, they would have been acted differently. I think that would suffice. I would like probably to remember. I wish I could remember some of that little funny thing that had experiences that happened. But right now,
I'm sure, in spite of all of the times that seemed harrowing or trying, there were enough bright things that you can look back on, and we tend to remember them anyway.
That's right. And I don't know if it was the. I think it went for a better bond between us. He was here alone in this country, and I had my mother for about 8 years. I think after I had moved to Alliance and like that, but. We could get home at the sort of night after a long, what seemed a weary day, and find some little incident that had happened that you could get it.
You could relax with and enjoy.
Well,
I think it's fine. You had that very nice relationship together, and that he was the inspiring sort of individual that he was. This is what makes life worthwhile.
That is true. I'm sure. And we it came to the place that we were just each other's family.
Yes.
I like this to think of Dr. Thompson first, naturally, as my husband, but my friend.
Yes.
We were good friends.
Yes.
Maybe I didn't know if this was apropos or not, but as I said, we did dance, and I do remember after we had remodeled this place, and. I had one of those cottage doors, and that was to keep people from just walking into what was my private office, one part of it, that I could take people, like in an emergency that came in. They didn't rush everybody right to the
emergency room.
Like they did. Then some light treatments that I gave, but in that room was the what we call the tablet cupboard. And so the upper part of this door, this can be cut out if you don't want. And the upper part of the door was open, and every chair was taken in and that came right off of the reception room. And there were two chairs sitting right inside the door, where you could look right in that room. So. I did refills and things like that. People came in, they just wanted their headache pill or whatever it was. Well, I would look on the chart if I didn't know what by the direction it was, and give it to them. So it just so happened that this day, doctor was getting medicine for a patient that he had in his private room, and I was there filling something for a walk-in, a patient, So. So he said, we were just sort of talking, and I was getting these pills in the envelope, and he was doing the same thing. And he said something to me that had happened, or maybe it wasn't to do with the news, I don't know what. But it amused me so that we're standing side by each, and I just went on and sort of just laid my head up on his shoulder like that. And he was quietly chuckling to himself, we were both. So these two very lovely ladies, patients, and they were new, had never been there before. And they said, do you see that? I wonder whether I want him for a dog. He's carrying on with his nurse.
Oh, that's interesting.
And how I see we didn't hear it.
Yeah.
And I think we both woke up at the same time that that door, the top part of that door was open.
Open, yeah.
But anyways, a patient on the other that was sitting with the back, with their back, that couldn't see what was going on. So she said to me, she happened to be coming to me for a light treatment. She said, what's going on back there? And I turned in and she said, told me what was there. And I told her, she said, well, no wonder. She said, no, they didn't know. So then before they got in, it was their time to go in. I was back out in the reception room at my desk, and somebody called in and called me by my name. And these women's faces got so red,
oh, actually,
see, because they knew everybody in there had heard
what they said. Yes. Well, that's an interesting story.